This is RSVNB Update, episode 623, recorded Thursday, June 15th, 2017. Metaphos Modesty. Hello, everybody, and you are listening to RSVNB Update. RSVNB Update covering Metaphos once again this week. This week we're going to cover some quests. This week also Mr. Bistro and Tanis are here with me.
Hey, how's it going?
Hello!
Welcome back, both of you. Thanks for doing this. I have the distinct understanding that you guys have been focusing really hard on Slayer, and that's all right. Because I can understand why you would want to do that. I mean, someone's got to take the sacrifice after all of this, right?
You know, yes. I love Slayer. And, you know, just so that we remind everybody, there's a skill of the month at Slayer this month. So,
very true, you know, very true.
I am locked in.
But to be fair, the sacrifice I was talking about is someone like myself having to do the grindy stuff while you guys get to go and kill things.
Yeah, you know, but you like quests, right, Shane?
That's right. That's right. As a matter of fact, I'm tier 8 city reputation right now, about 60k away from unlocking tier 9 in the final quest. So I hope to get that done this weekend sometime.
Awesome.
So that'll be great. Yesterday I had a 40k reputation day, believe it or not.
Wow. Whoa. So see? There's no problem with those numbers.
Yeah, wow. That's
or no, good. Sorry, 30K.
See, there's no problem with those numbers.
No. Or maybe it was
I take it you hit your obelisk and but then you pulled another 10K on top of that. That's good, man.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. So, anyways, before we get too far down that path of talking about quests and whatnot and the desert series, Vic the Traitor is back, and his brother Rick is also in Metaphos. So if you want to stay in Metaphos, you can actually talk to Rick right on the little platform where the lodestone is, and you can exactly do what you can do as you can do with Vic and Berthorpe. So this is going to be around for until June 19th. That's when you can trade the bonus XP in. So for 1 week and then a week following that, you're going to be able to spend on credits as you usually can with Rick and Vic. New items this time include Dungeoneering outfit pieces, Slayer masks from the third and fourth batches, and four more skilling outfits including the Lumberjack, Constructor, Golden Mining, and Master Runecrafter outfits. For those of you guys wondering, the third batch of Slayer masks includes Blood Velds, Aberrant Spectres, Dark Beasts, Jungle Strike Worms, Desert Strike Worms, and Ice Strike Worms, while the fourth includes Dagonoths, Gannet, Dermic, Runts and Beasts, Automatons, Eros, Black Demons, and Aquanites. So, if you're ever in the market for a mask that lets you create yourself an Ice Strike Worm task, this would be it. This would be your chance to do it. Unfortunately, you can get a random mask and you don't get to choose, so that's a little bit disappointing, but hey, there's got to be some drawbacks when you're dealing with Vic, right?
Well, did they fix the actual issue with how expensive these masks are?
I don't know what that issue was. What was the issue?
It was either the masks or the actual skilling sets. One of these were way overpriced.
The prices looked fine when I was there. Nothing looked out of whack. They all looked relatively uniform, so I'm going to assume they did at some point.
Okay, good.
I don't know. They're super high, and I mean, Vic is always kind of a ripoff, I mean, to begin with, but what else are you going to do with XP that's,
well,
you know,
I mean,
stuck in a skill you're not going to train?
Exactly.
So it's better than nothing. But one thing, I do have a problem with the mask, because what did they release less than a month ago, Shane?
I'm blanking. What's that?
Shattered Worlds.
Okay.
Where you can pick up the mask. So why did you add that with Vic this time? I mean, it's a small gripe, but it's just kind of like a, I don't really get that, guys. You know what I mean? Like, we have an awesome minigame that you should be encouraging people to get the mask from. But I digress.
Well, I think they just need more options, and I guess it's a little related to the major release. So, kind of fits. Yeah,
I mean, it's nitpicky, but, you know.
All right.
I guess I have to.
What are you guys planning on using Vic for this time around?
Slayer.
So, this time around, it's a bummer because you never know when Vic's coming, and I didn't have anything after that last XXP weekend.
Oh, okay.
I was literally just, like, out, and so...
Well, you can actually make some progress this weekend because the meteors are back. You get double XP on the lamps and stars that you get. So if you really wanted to and you were on a achievement binge, you could probably complete all your achievements and get double XP on all the stars you get this weekend and put them into something useful on Vic if that's something you wanted to do.
I don't know. I don't like to buy keys. That's the one.
Well, I'm
like,
not suggesting you buy them. I'm just suggesting you do daily challenges.
Oh, the daily. I forgot you get two keys for the daily, don't you?
No,
oh,
okay. Just one. Yeah. Just one.
Oh, just one.
Just
okay.
one. But
yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's cool. Also, a great weekend to do Menaphos quest because two keys per quest, right?
That's right.
So.
Boy, I got a lot of rep to get, though.
Yeah, I'm tier 8. That was a story, but we'll talk about that in just a few moments. So it doesn't seem to be anything else with Vic. So I guess we can move on to the patch notes for this week. They fixed a lot of things. There weren't really too many Menaphos related things in here, but definitely some of them are related to that. So I'm just going to start going through these, and if you guys find something that you want to talk about, please just stop me. So, a buff icon has been added, which displays when you're receiving the 5% XP boost in Menaphos and the Sophonim Slayer dungeon. I guess that's good because it's not really clear if you were getting that beforehand.
Yeah, that is good.
Your favorite faction in Menaphos is now reflected in the small overlay, so that you know which one is active without looking at the rep counter for how much XP you're getting. Nice little gold outline on that now. Ice Fiends on Ice Mountain now drop souls that can be collected by Ushabti jars. I'm assuming that's for the Slayer Dungeon.
Yep.
Which is good.
Why would anyone want an Ice Fiend in their Slayer Dungeon? Aren't those relatively
good? It's the fact that they missed them.
Oh,
yeah, well,
okay.
you have to complete your codex for whatever reason.
Ah.
That you need it. That's one of the things that you need. And there's been a few things that I've wondered. I'm like, have they overlooked this? Because I killed dwarves for a really long time, and I haven't gotten one of them yet either. So, you know.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's no way to know because it's random, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm. yeah.
So, I mean, on average, how long have you guys been going for a kill on a specific creature to get a codex?
It really depends on their levels.
Yeah. For example, like a higher level, I have done the corrupted workers probably – I've done at least 3 tasks of those. So that's a good 750 I've probably killed. I haven't gotten a soul yet. But the lower level stuff, you know, I've gotten within 2 or 3 kills before. So
I managed to get a crystal shapeshifter at right around 150 kills, which based on how your drop rates are sounding, sounds pretty good.
Yeah, and aren't those crystal shapeshifters really tedious to fight?
Not really. Like if you range them, is what I do. Obviously, they'll change to melee for the stat that's strongest against range, and then you just stun them, and yeah, you don't really even need to bring food if you know what you're doing.
All right, I guess. Players can no longer get stuck when adding creatures to their Slayer dungeon. I don't know what they mean by getting stuck, but okay.
I just want to know what creatures they were adding. Like, what was so big where you got stuck?
I don't know. You can now add both the Ring of Slaying or the Ferocious Ring to the Corrupted Slayer Helmet. You guys were talking about this pre-show. The Corrupted Slayer Helmet remains as a level 70 item, regardless of what you do to it. But you guys were saying the stats still increase?
Yeah, this I'm not sure if it's just something that that they have to fix or what, because they said previous to release that it was going to be a tier 80. So
yeah, I don't know. That.
Yeah, so I don't know. That could be just, you know, something they have to fix with a patch. But I have recently heard, and I'm just going to say this is rumor because I haven't been able to confirm myself. But I have heard that the Slayer Codex, once that's finished, even though the NPC alluded to you being able to give yourself assignments, that's not the case. That what the Codex actually does is you get a 0.7% accuracy and hit accuracy and damage bonus on your full Slayer helmet for every like 25 souls you've captured into all of them.
So basically then what you're saying is we don't know exactly what the completed Slayer Codex is going to be for yet.
Exactly. I mean, maybe
that's an ability of the helm.
I don't know. Which that would be cool. I mean, that'd be totally cool. But the souls are, you know, they're not easy to get, so I haven't been able to complete that. And I don't want to speak to it, you know, for sure if I haven't been able to do it. But that is what is being said in the rumor mill.
I don't know if anyone has completed it yet. I would be pretty amazed if someone has.
That would certainly be a lot of Slayer.
Because can you imagine getting like just Ripper Demons moving on to all the elite mobs? Like, I would hate to kill hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Ripper Demons.
Like, a lot of people already did that for the lore drops.
And it's going to happen because the higher the Slayer level, the harder it is to get the soul.
Yeah, I can handle like taking care of like a task worth of Ripper Demons, but it just sounds like a nightmare to do like 4 or 5 tasks of them.
Yeah. All right. Raptor Lamps can now cap out at level 99 Slayer values instead of awarding level 1 experience if you were level 100 or higher. That's a pretty funny little bug. The soul runes entry has been removed from the invention skill guide and added to the runecrafting skill guide. All right, right on. Achievements, which are still part of the old task system, will now have their difficulty listed at the beginning of their title. All right, that's great. It's nice to be able to see, which ones are part of the task diaries and what we need to complete for certain areas so we're not doing extra and we're not spending extra time before we get the rewards. I really hope we'll see some of these fixes coming in July for this task system. That I cannot underscore enough how much that's needed.
Yeah.
Cat will no longer wander the streets of Menaphos, QAT, which is of course one of the Menaphos cats. This is of course part of the Menaphos journal where if you collect the various tasks or various cats rather, you can get a cosmetic. So that might be something people are looking out for, Menaphos and cats.
It's one of the best parts of Menaphos.
Really? Why is that?
Just run around and collect cats.
Oh, okay, I don't like cats.
It reminds me of Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess, where you just pick up dogs and cats in Castletown.
Oh, okay.
I would just do that every time I was there.
All right. The reputation gained while on task and off task in the Sophanim Slayer dungeon has been increased. All right. So, Sophanim Slayer Dungeon Tennis, what are you getting for rep this week for completing a task?
You know, it has been more. I can't tell you how much more, but I've probably gotten,
How many tasks would you say you've done in the last week?
Oh, probably at least 5 or 6.
Okay.
In
the Menaphos dungeon?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And if that brought you to, what did you say, tier 3 city rep?
Yeah.
If I recall, around 100,000 rep points, give or take.
That's probably fair, because I haven't done anything other than Slayer to get rep on the main.
Okay. So let's see. Menaphos reputation, and you said you were tier 3?
Tier 3. Let me look.
Because
I am tier two. I am.
Okay,
I am almost
so if you
three,
are
tier
two, let's see, tier two rep would be at 6,600 XP. So you're somewhere between 6,600 and 19,800. So you're probably getting
halfway.
You're probably getting somewhere around 500 rep per task then.
Okay.
If I had to wager a guess on this.
500, I don't know if it's 500 per task.
You don't think that would, you think it'd be higher? I
think it's a little higher. How many hours is those five tasks? I'm assuming that's like nine?
Well, I have like, maybe I have sold Devourers and Corrupted Preferred. So I've probably done three Corrupted, probably two Soul Devourers. Soul Devourers a lot longer. I don't know. I would probably say closer to like seven.
Seven?
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's not too bad then. I mean, it's got to be worthwhile for doing, and it can't be a great deal faster than what we have in game right now. So I guess that is probably within line what you're getting. So they also improved city quests so that if you have done any city quests before this update, you will get the extra reputation for doing that. So these are the little quests that you can do when you're just running around in the city and you talk to someone. Also, dragging and dropping sandstone from the inventory will now correctly drop the sandstone. I feel at this point, since we're talking about Menaphos, it's also fair to mention that last week, after the show went out, but after we recorded also, we discovered the soul obelisks, and these were unlocked, and you can get 20,000 XP per day for doing these. So that is basically the way I have been leveling my reputation in Menaphos. So it, you know, you guys are right. This does improve the amount of reputation that you get for this daily. And yes, I think my original point still stands that it's not an actual reputation system, so to speak, because it's very one-dimensional. But I think at least this takes the sting out of it and how long it would take if you were just doing standard skilling there.
Yeah.
So, anyways, continuing with the patch notes, lava lanterns are now treated as prismatic rewards on Treasure Hunter when unfreezing and freezing certain categories in the category interface. Players will now be correctly sent back to Menaphos when exiting the ports portal if they had previously entered from there. All right, that's nice. I noticed that little glitch when they added that ports portal. Players can now use the tackle boxes to store and teleport the raw beltfish, catfish, and the desert soul to the bank. Another option here that is possible if you have this item set is to use the shark set that you either get from doing invention or through Vic or through Treasure Hunter. Because that shark set, the 5-piece shark set, has a consume option where it'll automatically consume any fish that you catch, allowing you to just sit at the fishing spot and not need to bank or drop items. So if anyone is wanting to fish, this is the way to do it. That's got to be the method that I would recommend because you can't crystallize that spot. And when having this, you know, you just sit there and it basically becomes just like waterfall fishing.
Yeah. Unless you are a lower level, like the level that was, you know, meant for Menaphos. Because I noticed with the catfish, it's given it's 1500 HP. That's actually pretty good and pretty. Like, it almost replaces Monkfish, which is behind all of those quests.
Yeah, and I mean, after you get to tier 2 ports and you unlock the deposit box, it's not too big of a problem to just run to the deposit box and dump stuff in if you want to keep the fish. But the shark outfit is a great option if you don't want to move. And you're
for sure.
And you're just wanting to have a bit of a relaxed rep ride. So.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Joining a friend in Menaphos via the friends list, if you're eligible, should now correctly teleport you to the Menaphos lodestone. All right, that's nice.
That's good.
And they added some things to the buff and debuff bars in-game. This is not Metaphos related, but the Stone of Jazz Duration, the percentage of additional damage bonus gained, has been added, which is nice because you go fight Glacors, for example, and you get the Jazz boost, but you had no idea of it exactly how much it was or how long it was going to be lasting for, right? So that's
great. I thought we used to have an icon, but I guess we didn't.
No. It was a message in chat that would say when it was about to run out, and that was it.
Okay.
Yeah. Fury Shark effect duration, Book of Char effect duration, and Zaros Godsword spec cooldown. Those are the other three things that they've added. So I think we're finally starting to see some refinement into what the buff bar is going to be capable of, so that's great. You're also going to get notifications for when you're hit by certain abilities that disable your prayers and curses and how long they're going to be disabled for. So that's
a good
really
one.
Good. Yeah, that's
really good.
God. Yeah, that seems like anyone who's doing PVM would gain great benefit out of that. Dark Beast have
had
there's
so many times. Oh, let me stop you there.
Okay.
There's so many times when you're either doing a task or fighting a boss, normally fighting a boss, that you just kind of forget that your prayers got disabled by something.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hard to see too.
It is hard to see.
Hard to see.
This has to be like the best of those new buffs, debuffs that they put onto that bar.
All right. Dark Beasts have had their max hit changed back to 600 from 1080. Oh,
thank goodness, man. They were hitting like trucks.
Well, I mean, they are level 90 Slayer creatures, so they should be a bit of a challenge. But when you think of it, 1080, that's on average, 10 hits for someone wearing the Port's tank armor, and then they're going to be done.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a max
hit. I feel like they
needed
to... They could have gone to, like, maybe 800. I don't know if they need to go all the way down to 600.
I'm going to agree with Mr. Bistro here. Because the last time I fought Dark Beasts at the 600 HP, they were practically AFKable.
So, well, if you got your stuff upright, I mean,
well, exactly.
I guess you probably could.
But, I mean, is that what you want for a level 90 Slayer creature?
I don't know. I know when they were hitting like trucks, man, the tasks were not that enjoyable. But I guess I would have accepted 8. Like you said, 8, okay. I would go with that.
Hey, what are we debating this for, though? They took it back down to 600.
I know, right? They took it back, yeah, right? I know.
All right, now here's a great one. Higher tier luck effects now work for all tiers below it. For example, the Ring of Fortune can now work for areas where only the Ring of Wealth would work. So, of course, this means now all you need is the luck of the dwarves, and you got the entire tier, just as we suggested way back when. So, excellent.
Good.
Also, an option to teleport to Keldegrim has been added to the Luck of the Dwarves ring. And for Hazelmere's Signet ring, it now has the option to teleport to Miscellany and the Grand Exchange, Keldegrim, or Tree Gnome Stronghold. We're still trying to figure out what the special effect is on Hazelmere's Signet ring and exactly where the best place is to get one of these. But, you know, it's Jagex, and this is one of the huge things that we... chatted about last week and numerous other times here. So
yeah, I thought it gave you a chance on a double drop or something. Like
yeah,
that.
It does, and that's it. That's all it does. But I mean, there might be something else we don't know at this point.
Okay.
So, all right. Now there's some hot fixes for last week's Metaphos update that are game impactful that we should talk about. So, players will no longer have to pay a fee to reclaim their loot from the chest in the Sophonim Slayer dungeon if they die outside of it. All right, that's fair, and that's good. Though, I mean, how far away is the chest from the entrance to the dungeon?
That's right there. There's chests all throughout it. Really, there's one in the beginning, one in the end.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah.
In solo shifting tombs, players will only receive a maximum of 3 sargophagi to open, making the experience more solo friendly.
That's good.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And you know, this was the number one complaint I think about shifting tombs is that it wasn't solo friendly, and it it just got boring after a set amount of time to do, because if you did that, then there was no point there because you weren't getting the right amount of rep, and it was almost impossible to complete on your own without a group. So this should be overall helpful. So, all right. Moving on from that, scan clue coordinates have been moved outside of the water in the desert. All right, that's great. You will no longer receive city quests in Menaphos, which require more than 100 seeds. Okay. So as you can see here, the city quests are kind of shaping up to be fetch quests and whatnot. So I haven't done any of them, but I mean, it might be a fun little distraction and diversion to do at some point.
Well, and that had to do with the buy limits, wasn't it? Like, you had you needed more than what the buy limit was. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a larger issue of itself if buy limits should be looked at. But I mean, I don't know. Jagex knows what's going on with the economy, so we'll trust them there.
Right.
Players can now reclaim items on death from the Camel Warriors once again. It's just outside Sophonim. So that's one of the high level Slayer creatures that was added back in November of 15, I believe it was. So mm-hmm. That was a long time ago. Amazing.
Well, it doesn't seem that long.
Yeah. The Choleric Imp has returned to the Fire Altar for those of you looking for a yellow bead. And when a player completes the Golden Path, a world broadcast will no longer be displayed. However, friends of the player will see a broadcast, which makes sense because there was one of these broadcasts every 5 minutes on the first couple days of Menaphos release. So,
yeah.
That's pretty funny.
It really is. And, I mean, at this point, the Golden Path competition is finished. And if you wanted to complete that, you could have just entered in the appropriate names inside the sundial, which was in the Grand Library after Menaphos was released. So, all right. Are you guys ready to talk about some quests? The quest that I have grinded my rep out for and have some information about what exactly is going on in the city, and that people are actually might actually find these quests interesting compared to what they're expecting given all the rep out there.
Yes, I want to hear what your selfless sacrifice was all about.
Yeah, bring it on.
It hasn't been that great thus far, but we shall see. So first up is Crocodile Tears, which is the first quest that you unlock at Tier 3 overall Menaphos City reputation, also requiring 30 agility, 47 woodcutting, and 72 fishing, and 73 hunter for various skilling aspects that you need to take care of when you're inside Menaphos. So, Crocodile Tears. This is an interesting quest because it takes place and it starts almost entirely outside of Menaphos until you get there. You start this quest by talking to Senlidin in Uber Mastaba, which is just north of the town of Uzer. And if you're wondering why I said Uber there, it's because it so turns out that when I was typing out my notes for this, my autocorrect converted Uzer to Uber. So that's nice. Thank you. anyways, Senlidin has concerns for the desert, and one of these concerns is to stop her revered crocodiles from attacking you and attacking other people. And that is the sole purpose of this quest, to stop crocodiles from attacking people.
Mm.
It doesn't seem like much on the surface, but we learn some interesting things along the way. It's a question of how we get there that's going to be the real linchpin of this quest. It's ultimately mentioned that there's a connection between crocodiles and a goddess called Krondis, which we've heard in previous desert quests. Jex and Sphinx and Sophonim are able to provide information about Krondis, and Krondis is ultimately one of the four minor gods of the Menaphite pantheon, considered the goddess of resourcefulness and modesty. And this will play a key role later in
modesty?
This quest. Right?
I've seen some screenshots. That's funny.
But there's another reason why, and it's absolutely painful. So, okay. So you might be wondering, how do we find Krondas? Well, there's a relic that Senlaton gives you from inside that tomb that it will, quote-unquote, may be able to help you find Krondas. It's a dowsing rod, and it takes you on a huge run throughout the desert. You visit the oasis near Senlaton's temple. You visit the Camel Warrior Oasis, and finally the oasis just north of the Bedouin camp. None of these work. None of them work. Ultimately, after that, you realize that the relic has to be tuned to Krondas. And how are you going to tune this relic to Krondas? Do you guys have any ideas?
I don't.
Mm-mm.
This is done by talking with the three Elid elementals that are the source of the Elid River in the desert. And, of course, the River Elid is a mysterious river because it just starts out north of the Dominion Tower and runs through the entire desert down between Sophonim and Menaphos. And that's what makes this interesting, is that these Elid elementals are the ones who can attune the dowsing rod in order to find Krondas. So what you need to do is you need to take a rope and run directly north to the Dominion Tower, and just north of the Dominion Tower. And there is a cave and a waterfall that you can climb up. And inside there, you make your way through a cave, and you will ultimately be able to talk to the Elid elementals, and they will adjust and fix your dowsing rod in order to tell you where exactly you should go to find the goddess of Krondas. And through doing this, after running through the desert, you discover that Krondas is at the pyramid just southwest of the Ports District. So you run all through the desert looking for this goddess pyramid to only discover that it's in Menaphos. And this is really the first annoying part of this quest, because you're running around the desert and you're trying to basically use the system that forms a directional scan clue, as if it was a clue scroll. And, I mean, who wants to run around the desert for this? It feels as though it was extra and unnecessary when we could have just got this information from Senlaton right off the bat. So that's gripe number one with this quest. So, anyways, after you get your dowsing rod fixed, you just make your way to the Ports District, and you talk to the portmaster, and he will have a ship that can take you to the Krondas Pyramid. This is the same ship that allows you to travel to the Sunken Pyramid and Polnivnich, just out of the Ports District there. So you guys will know where that is, as you guys have done the Slayer task before. So after this, you end up at the Krondas Pyramid. And I must say, this Krondas Pyramid and inside of it is graphically stunning, as is just the rest of Menaphos. So, if anything of this quest, just the entire graphics that you're exposed to on this are grade A, as we reiterated last week with Menaphos. So, even if you're not one nut for quests, I would recommend that you, when you get this rep done, you do this quest, because it just exposes you to really interesting environments. But anyways, once you get inside the pyramid, you're granted an audience with Krondas. There's a high priest there who warns you about talking to Krondas and what you may actually be getting yourself into. And this is what you guys were chuckling about here first. Krondas is a crocodile god. And speaking of modesty, oh boy, just look at the screenshots and video of what Krondas looks like at this point. So, aside from that, this is why we say modesty, because Krondas isn't anything but modest when it comes to what the asks are. She wants a snack. So, first and foremost, she says that she would like some beltfish. So, you go fish beltfish for her. It's not good enough. She wants toothpicks to clean her teeth, which are Acadia logs. So you go chop some Acadia logs. That's not good enough. She then decides that she wants some new pyramid toppers for inside her pyramid. and you get those from the agility pyramid. So you got to make your way all the way to the agility pyramid and run the agility pyramid 4 times to receive 4 golden pyramid toppers. And it's worth noting that after you deposit each of these items, you need to go back to the pyramid and give them to Cronus. You can't collect them all at once. It won't work.
Oh, no. Oh.
So you go to the fishing spot, run back to the pyramid. Go to the Imperial District, chop some logs, run back to the pyramid. Go to the Agility Pyramid, run it 4 times, go back to the pyramid. Finally, she needs more toothpicks, and she wants plover birds, which are the new hunting creature in Sofidum, to use as toothpicks for some reason. So you go catch 8 of those, then you bring them back to her. And then finally, a demand for more food. She wants 16 croc ices from Menaphos. I'm sorry, Narda.
No.
And as you know, with croc ices, you can't teleport with them. So you're limited to using the magic carpet network and running directly through Menaphos, through the shifting tombs, in order to get back to the ports district and then the boat to bring these croc ices to Krondas. So 16.
And then I don't think the no teleport thing is that bad. I appreciate it sometimes.
And I mean, it's made easier by the fact you can use the magic carpets and you can use the shifting tombs. That makes it a lot easier. So I wasn't really too upset about the no teleporting thing. I was actually quite fine with that. So, but in any case, after this, she says she wants more. She wants 32 croc ices this time. And this is the point where you and the High Priest finally decide to say no and put your foot down. This doesn't bode well. And through explaining this to her and repeatedly saying no, both you and the High Priest, she regurgitates some corruption from within her body because she's just that angry that you won't bring her more food. Okay, so it's not that we need to clean up this regurgitation. It's that it's turns into the boss monster of this quest called the Ukanduka, which has 75,000 life points, has no weakness, and uses melee and range to attack. So then you just need to basically attack this creature, take him down from 75,000 life points, and that effectively wraps up the quest. It's not a hard boss fight. I did it with roughly 1 inventory of Rocktail. The interesting mechanic of this here is that this boss will occasionally eat from within your inventory if you have food. So if you have Rocktail, it'll occasionally consume one of your Rocktails for you and just make it disappear. Yeah, it is. And I was half expecting it to increase its own life points when it did this, but it didn't. So it was just a matter of taking it from your inventory, and it didn't heal itself. But just DPS the creature down, use melee. It should be no problem for anyone who has around tier 80 plus ports gear. The creature is level 108. So after killing this corrupted beast, talk to the High Priest again, and then return to Senlaton in Uzer Mastaba. And then when you'll arrive, you'll find that Osman is there arguing with Leela. He's not convinced that we will be successful in preventing the crocodiles from attacking, and he has a plan that might work better and accomplish more, which we'll learn more about in future quests. Senlaton and Leela are ultimately pleased to hear that the corruption of the crocodiles in the desert has been removed. So, I am going to call this a fetch quest. A quest that involves you running around to just deliver these things to Krondas. And ultimately, I don't know. You know, I think they could have gone about this a better way as they could have with the rep. But do you guys think RuneScape is known for fetch quests?
I thought they've kind of been getting away from it.
Yeah, and that was my thoughts exactly as well, and why this was very perturbing. So it was a little bit distressing while doing it, but nonetheless, it was a relatively simple quest. It was classed as medium and master. It fits within the desert storyline. You get 1 quest point, 35,000 fishing and hunter XP, and 15,000 agility and woodcutting XP. You also get a Krondas relic, that gives you 5,500 reputation for a chosen faction of your choice. So that's nice. Also, immunity from desert heat, so you no longer need to be using water skins.
Oh, that's cool.
So that is the reason I think most people are going to want to do this quest. And also the
ice cream cone hat gone?
I mean, I'm sure you could still wear it. I just don't think it would have any effect.
Oh.
So, yeah. That might be something to pick up at the summer. But, so yeah, that's this quest in a nutshell. And, you know, I think I have mixed feelings about it. I like the desert heat thing. I like what we learned about the crocodiles. I like what we learned about Krondis. I just don't like that it was behind 19,000 XP worth of reputation at Tier 3. So, take it for what it's worth. This is going to be a fun little quest to do at the end of your reputation grind. So, we'll have to wait and see. There was also an interesting cutscene at the end between the Pharaoh talking about Krondis, and that Krondis has and Jabri have basically been able to make progress on what is the free fear of keeping many Menophos inside the walls. And basically Jabri says, we can up our payments to the bandits and thugs around the desert as a substitute. So this is kind of shaping up exactly like we saw in the West Ardoian Plague series, where they're using something that is made up in order to keep the citizens around in here. The only difference, I think, is that we're aware of it right off the bat through seeing this cutscene. The Pharaoh says, good, make it so, we may have to pay Krondis a visit sooner rather than later. So there is definitely some corruption going on between the Pharaoh and Jabri. So basically, they're all ultimate thing is that the new must consume the old, and the time of the pantheon is coming to a close, and soon the whole world will know a new master, which is what we end up talking about in the next quest, which is Armad in the North. So there is lore in this quest, and it's locked behind reputation. I don't like that. How do you guys feel about that?
I'm fine with it.
You said a few things in there that I don't love, like clue scroll related. I don't like that.
Yeah, it's basically
I don't like that at all.
Yeah, it's basically the coordinate or the compass clue scroll.
Yeah,
running around the desert and whatnot. So
that's not my kind of thing there, and neither is running that Childi pyramid. So you have to run the pyramid,
four
get
times.
A topper, and then run back.
No, you can bring four toppers at once.
Okay, whew. That's better, but still, okay.
Yeah,
I don't think the Childi pyramid's that bad.
No, it's not. It takes about it takes about 3 or 4 minutes per run, so it's about a 15-minute time investment to do that part of it.
I don't remember it taking that long.
Oh, okay. Maybe I just was slow, but...
Yeah, Shane, what's your problem?
All right.
No, I could just be wrong. I have no idea what time it is anymore for that.
Yeah, time is an interesting thing, isn't it? So, all right. So on to Armad in the North, and this quest requires 99,000 reputation and tier 6 to do. So, this quest is the more interesting one, in my opinion, primarily because what ends up happening with it is that we don't need to do the fetch aspect of it again. So, that's great. Basically, with Armad in the North, you don't really need many items. You just need combat gear. Hassan wants a progress report delivered to Emir Ali in Al-Qarid. And this is also the time to bring Osman the book that he wanted from back in Jack of Spades. So you get this book from the Grand Library, and you go there, and you don't know where to find it. But you find out that Aristocris, who is located in Polivnich, might be able to help you find the book. So we go to Polivnich and find him. We ultimately get attacked by a gang of Menophyte thugs who have been tailing him, and we dispatch them. There's four of them. They each have 15,000 life points. Not very hard fight. Just kill them. And then you bring him back to Menophos. He ultimately allows you to find the book. And what we're wanting to find from this book is information on the Menophos bloodlines to figure out who exactly might be the heir to the throne. And once you're inside the library, he finds the book for us. You know what it's called?
Our Man in the North?
No.
I don't know.
It's got a really hilarious name to it. The name of the book is The Hawfully Hungry Hyena by Hal E. Gator and Rhoda Camel.
Okay.
The book is disguised as a children's book, which, given that name, makes sense why it's a children's book, right?
Yeah, good.
And it ultimately also gives us the information that we need on the Menophos bloodlines. We return back to the Senlitan, just north of Uzer, to gather more information about the royal bloodlines, and the Senlitan will give Osman the proof he desires if he visits with her. She ultimately reveals that Osman and Leela are her descendants, and Osman is next in line for the throne. That is what we learn when we talk to the Senlitan, but Osman doesn't know this yet. We then return the book and the progress report to Emir Eli in Alcard, and you know, you'd think that could be all for the quest, but absolutely not. Jabri enters the room. He is the one who is our ambassador to Menophos, and there's ultimately a standoff between him and Osman. It's revealed that Osman gave the Menophyte thugs the location of Jabri, and Osman also states that it was Jabri who killed Emir Shah at the end of Diamond in the Rough, which we knew from that cutscene way back when. Ultimately, Osman is arrested, but Jabri is able to flee, even though Emir Ali wanted them both arrested. We locate Jabri in Alcard through the crafting shop. And now this is where this quest gets really interesting. Because in this crafting shop in Alcard, we chase him through the city by running over washing lines, sliding down awnings, and jumping between buildings. And if I recall, Old School has a Alcard agility course that basically sends you over the roof of the city, right?
I don't know about OS, but we did it for... the other Othan quest, didn't we? What's it, yeah. Diamond in the Rough? Or no, it wasn't Diamond. It was Stolen Hearts, right?
Stolen Hearts. This is just more of that. And it's a really interesting dynamic to be able to do this now, given NXT, and see how wide-ranging the graphics options are in Alcard. And it really shows off the graphically updated nature of the city. And basically, when you're going on this run through the city of Alcard, you're looking for Jabri. But after you find Jabri, you'll discover that the first one you find him was a clone, and you talk to him, and these are all basically decoys, and then when you try and arrest him, he disappears and hurts you for 10% of your life points because they're decoys. So you ultimately end up looking through five Jabri clones in total, and this ultimately leads you to the duel arena, where you will fight Jabri at the end of the quest. So, interesting mechanic with running through the various roofs and whatnot in Alcard, but also an interesting mechanic that they're decoys, and it's not exactly the real guy we're looking for. And it's kind of an interesting thing to think about, is what would be enabling him to do this. It's definitely some kind of magic, which I assume we'll be maybe learning more about in some time in the future. So you make your way through Alcard, and you ultimately end up at the duel arena, and you have to fight some more clones. So this is an interesting boss fight, because it's not a boss fight that is going to involve, you know, tons of EOC combat abilities or anything like that. It's essentially a spot the difference game. There are 8 copies of Jabri, and you need to find the one that doesn't look right. And Tanis, I think you might have some issues with this.
This sounds great. Perfect.
Some of them have different coloring. Some of them are facing the wrong direction. Some of them are using different attack stances. So,
okay.
And if you don't find it fast enough, it re-randomizes itself.
Well, got to get lucky at least once, right?
Yeah. Eventually. And when you find the correct one, you'll take them down. And these have 10,000 life points and they're combat level 112. So, I mean, I missed one of them and that was really annoying. So it would be nice if the visual differences were made more apparent, aside from maybe just the way they were standing or maybe a difference in the weapon they were using. Because, like you said, and like we like to talk about, Tanis, when it comes to accessibility here, this is not something Jagex has been known for being good at in some of these quests.
No, not when it comes to quests. Not at all.
So
that's kind of a bummer. But yeah. I'm glad, you know, for the heads up, I mean, at least I'll know to expect it. I hate walking into it not knowing, because then you're just... Then I just get pissed.
Yeah.
I'm just like, are you kidding?
Yeah. And I mean, like, even I couldn't tell for some of them. That's how faint they were. And then I finally discovered that, oh, this is the real one. And you're going to be it. But the trick about this is, if you can't tell which one is real, just attack all of them. And if you're quick enough about it, going to all eight of them, you will be able to get it and fight Jabri at the end of it.
So you use AoE abilities would be good.
No, because no? you're not in combat until you click it, and each of these only have one life
point,
and they're too far away. So, like, for example, they're in a clock pattern, so basically you just click and then they disappear if it's not the real one. So if you just click really quick, you should be able to do that. But, I mean, that's clearly not what Jagex intended, but that's certainly the way to brute force this combat fight.
Hurry before they patch it. Come on.
Yeah, and, you know, prep. If anything, I think this would be the point of the quest where I think some Ninja TLC fixes would be warranted later on. Because, I mean, it's not nice to make people look for differences in an NPC if they have vision impairment like you do, or even are just, you know, sitting far back from the screen and have a wide-angle camera view. So,
yeah.
But we'll have to wait and see if there's anything in the patch note about that. But anyways, after you defeat Jabri four more times in the duel arena, for a total of four times, the god Het appears. You'll recall we've heard of Het before. Het is, of course, one of the desert pantheon gods. And Het tells Jabri that... he has lost, but Jabri implies that he has the ability to have Amisket come after both your own player and Het. So obviously Jabri is involved with Amisket in some deeper way than we're currently aware of. And this is definitely going to be looked at in the next quest, probably. I haven't done it yet. And if not, then the cutscene at the end of this quest. Basically, Jabri teleports away after that when... realize then that even the Pharaoh in Menaphos is likely to want him imprisoned for what he has done. So there is no easy way out for Jabri here, so he just teleports away. Het then informs you that himself, Kronis, and Aitmekin plan to search for Scabbaras and deal with the plague in Sophonim. Het also mentions that his mind was cleared after all the underhanded plots that were surrounding Menaphos and Alcarid have been exposed. So you, in terms of what you've been doing here with Osman and Jabri, that has definitely helped Het, and Het is in a position to help us now going forward. Back in Alcarid, Osman and Emir Ali are arguing, which was still happening up in the Alcarid Palace, and the end resolution of this is that Osmond is exiled from Alcarid. Osmond, as we said in the previous quest, had a larger goal in mind, not only to remove the corruption of the crocodiles in the desert, but he is also set on becoming Pharaoh and building peace between Alcarid and Menaphos and using his power in order to do that. So, as you can see here, this is a huge plot turn for Osman. It's been a while since Jagex has done anything meaningful with the Signature Heroes, and I think that this here is a great example of that. Osman is a Signature Hero, right?
Not that I knew of. He was in Othan.
Oh, Well, I got my hopes up then. He's not a signature hero. I thought he was one of them. It's Ozan I was thinking of. So,
I never trusted him.
Yeah.
Never trust
but,
a spy.
I mean, it's a very interesting plot twist for his character, right? I mean, he wants to become pharaoh and ultimately rule all of the desert. So,
yeah,
that's definitely something.
Definitely interesting.
That's
he's the Frank Underwood of RuneScape.
Has he killed anyone yet?
I don't think so.
It's coming.
It probably will. It probably will. And at the end of this quest, there is once again a third-person cutscene that we're exposed to that provides more information and is kind of unsettling. So it's a cutscene again with the Pharaoh who calls Jabri in, but Jabri doesn't appear. And this ultimately combined with Het's return means that the Pharaoh has more sinister plans because Jabri isn't there to keep the Pharaoh in line. And with Het returned, that obviously means that Het is going to be involved more in what's going on and the Menaphite gods are going to be more active. So the ultimate message here is that the Pharaoh intends to ascend to godhood.
Okay, now we're getting interesting.
Right?
All right, but he needs an elder object for that, right?
He just needs the ability to kill one of the other gods.
Okay, so you don't need the power.
I don't think you need an elder artifact to do that.
Huh.
I could be wrong, but I'm not entirely sure. So,
well, this is interesting.
Yeah,
all
it
right,
is,
cool.
And you know. I kind of have mixed feelings about it because we've seen this entire storyline before with Sliske, right?
Yeah, that's true. And I'm done with gods getting killed because it's just weird.
But, right. And I mean, Jagex could be going about this differently, allowing the player to have more of an impact in it to prevent it from happening. But at the end of the day, I don't know if another godhood ascension story is the way to go. I'll just read you guys some of the chat here from the Pharaoh. So, but how still the day is, nothing makes a sound, or if it does, I cannot hear it. I am elevated above all the simple strife and people's petty problems. This is after the Pharaoh calls Jabri in, but Jabri doesn't come. The Pharaoh goes on to say, every man in this world envies me. Every man in this world envies me again with emphasis. I have been plucked from my mortal coil by the gods themselves. This realm is just an unfulfilling limbo to an eternity most high. And so on and so forth. The unyielding affection from my supplicants is the only thing I demand. And in return, I do so much for them. But it seems that even that, which should come naturally, is beyond their seal-limbed grasp. Reading on further, the Pharaoh says, my ascent to godhood is inevitable. This throne is just a stepping stone to an even greater power, wherein my words will shake the very sand we stand upon. My worth will be undeniable to every worthless vassal in Gilinor. So obviously the desert is waking up here, and they intend to control more than just the desert with this. And that was perhaps the biggest reveal of Menaphos thus far coming from one of these quests. And then following this, you know, there's no Jabri. So. Whew.
Yeah, that's quite the
twist, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, huge development for Osman. And we ultimately discover what the Pharaoh's goal is here. You don't get any real special rewards from this. The only thing is another relic of Het that gives you 5,500 Menaphos reputation in an area of your chosen.
Seriously?
Yep. Jeez. And that's how I was able to do that 35,000 rep day.
Oh, okay.
The two quests, the obelisk, and some skilling. So this is what you get for 99,000 tier 6 Menaphos rep. This quest, which is really full of story and discussion, and ultimately, I think, ramped up the desert quest in quite a meaningful way. So I'm pleased with this quest. Once again, it's just a shame it's behind the reputation system to get to it.
Yeah, and I fear that other players may not share your enthusiasm when they end up with some reputation and nothing else.
Right, and see, that's the entire problem here, is that this quest, unless you're interested in the lore, doesn't really feel useful. Yes, it's a requirement for completing Fight Club, and you get the lore from it, but that's it. So if you are grinding and you're going to be doing rep in Menaphos, and you're not a questier, you're not going to be happy about this. So that comes back to Jagex's central premise about this, is that the quests probably shouldn't have been behind this huge reputation grind. So,
yeah. No, I'd have to agree with that. That feels like busy work. Yeah,
and I mean, it's also kind of baffling that we're dealing with another God Ascension story, which we might be able to thwart this time, but if it ends up being that, it just feels like we've been there, done that already. Unless it's going to tie into something else like the Elder Gods, but I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm wondering about, because I thought they had to have an Elder, like, artifact. But because, see, Saliske had the staff when he did it. Or Sir Doman had the thing, the crown. This is the crown. It's a something like that.
Oh, okay. So this explains why they're so gung-ho about Ascension. This quest and these four desert quests, according to Maud Rowley, take place in the Fifth Age. Interesting. You know, it would have been nice, like the other Fifth Age quests, if there was a banner saying this quest takes place in the Fifth Age.
Yeah. That,
because we're thinking in our mind, Gothix is dead, the Gothix edicts are gone, so there's definitely gods to work with here. But if we're in the Fifth Age, that means that the edicts are still around, I think. So I might need to consult with some lore people on this, because that might make the ascension of the Pharaoh an easier thing to reconcile if there are no gods on Gilinor at this time to deal with, providing it is in the Fifth Age. So,
yeah.
All right, I'm going to look into this.
That would add more gravitas to the story for sure.
Yeah, if it was Fifth Age and there were no gods, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So that is our man in the north, and I do hope that we can discuss Fight Club next week, but that's all that's all depending on reputation and whatnot. So fingers crossed.
Go, Shane, go.
Yeah, yep. You got this.
Yeah,
you can do it.
I am working on this to, you know, keep you guys from needing to grind this out, and though I was interested in this storyline, so.
Shane grinds, so you don't have to.
All right. Any other Menaphos things you guys would like to discuss before we move on to JX's big announcement of this week?
I don't think so.
Not for me.
All right. So, JX announced this week that adding items to Invention for levels 99 to 120 will be a part of the next expansion. What we do not know is we do not know if this is going to be the sole aspect of this expansion, but we do know it will play a part of it and a big role in it. So what they're looking at doing with the future of Invention here is adding things such as gizmo bags, extracting gizmos from items, new devices and blueprints, and the removal of the inspiration system. What do you guys think of that?
I'm okay with that, but I don't think they explained what it was being replaced with very well. Like,
right.
I was very confused they were talking about.
What I got from it's going to be replaced with is a kind of like a reverse engineering aspect, where if you disassemble enough of an item and you have a high enough invention level, you will automatically learn how to make something. So if you, for example, disassemble enough gnome things, for example, you would be able to unlock something from the gnome tech tree going forward with inspiration. And I mean, it's clear, I think, that inspiration isn't working because people have so much of it and there's nothing really to spend it on, and it doesn't really feel like a great mechanic for discovery. So that's why they're doing that. That's the sense I got of what they want to do. I'm not sure exactly how it'll end up turning out, but it's an interesting jumping off point. Gizmo bags to hold gizmos that you aren't using, and also the ability to remove gizmos from items. So if you get a good gizmo, you don't need to waste all those resources on it again. I think a lot of people are going to be happy about that, especially the ones who have invested highly in huge perks, right?
Except for the people that already put, you know, the best on all of their weapons.
Yeah. Like,
damn. But yes, that's sorely needed.
Yeah. They're also looking to complete the skill, and this means they want to add items, but they don't want to add new perks, new components, or new tech trees at this time. They'll be filling in the gap between levels 99 and 120.
Well, and to me, I got the feeling that they're making it they're bringing it more within the vision that was first announced like a long, long, long time ago about invention. When they first talked about the inspiration, it was supposed to be like a breakdown kind of thing and get an idea and a blueprint like that. I mean, what we ended up with wasn't really what they talked about at all. And then they're also talking about machines. That was something that,
yes, and you know, that
Mark talked about.
And that is what they're going to be doing also with this update. We'll get to that in just a moment, but they want suggestions for high-level, impactful devices. They want them to be impactful, and they need to be balanced, and they can't break the game. Most suggestions they've seen so far are heavily imbalanced. So one of the examples they gave is you might give this machine a set of items, and at the end of the week you come back to it and you have some components to use for invention. That's one of the examples they gave. Aside from that, not really many ideas were given. And I think it's worth discussing this further about what we'd like to see for these devices. Because if you think about it right now, a sprinkler Mark I, that's great, but it's really not that special, right? It doesn't add new gameplay.
And the one thing that, like, I don't know, maybe they're just not, like, history people, but I was kind of disappointed that they were like wanting to use golems and this and that, because they're like, we need to keep the medieval theme. I'm like, they had machines in medieval times. They didn't run on gas, but they had machines. Hello, did you ever hear of Da Vinci? Like, that bugged me. I'm like, because that's what I want to see.
Yeah,
as a machine.
Like the idea they gave was golem. The golem you give your swords and whatnot, and it decomposes them. That was that item.
Yes.
And I mean, yeah, I guess so. Like, what would you guys like to see for machines? Like, you guys have any ideas?
Chainsaws.
Treasure hunter.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, the dwarven chain axe from Treasure Hunter.
Oh, my God.
They got that. Yeah, we got jackhammer, you know. You've got a fish vacuum. Yeah, so we got that.
Forget it.
how about like an automatic, like a plant cure dispenser, something like if something like got diseased, it just dispensed a little cure to it, maybe.
Oh, maybe like something to add to the farming patch, kind of like those stakes you can put in your plant pots in real life to tell you when they need to be watered.
Yeah,
that might be like an interesting idea, like where you're going with the farming aspect.
I mean, you'd have to fill it up yourself, and you'd have to provide everything, but it would run automatically. You know,
you I like use... the idea.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. No, go ahead. Finish your idea.
Oh, I was moving on to the next. So.
Oh. Yeah. I'm thinking that they could take like the berries from the Ark and use them to make like sauces or something to put.
But you need a device, like a berry press.
Something like that. I don't know.
Oh, there's an idea. Like a food processor. Like a food processor, and then you can dump all your arc berries into it and other farming goods, and you can make interesting jams, jellies, and pastes and add to the cooking skill.
And add to the herb lore skill.
Oh, that would be a great idea. And that would also let you in some ways perhaps make cooking more useful and tailor cooking to yourself, kind of like with the initial idea of what invention was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay. Chemistry lab kit for Herblore, allowing you to make modified extreme potions and make them tradable on the exchange. Since we had a question about that a week ago or
something. Yeah, I was going to say that could work with that then.
Okay. So there's some interesting ideas. All right. I'm going to send this segment away somewhere, and hopefully it'll be seen on that because, I mean, I think we just came up with some great ideas here, though we could be biased because we created them. But listeners, if you like these invention device ideas, let us know.
Yeah, and can we get an alking machine, something like that? You put something in, and over time, it will alk it for you. You put in the runes, you put in everything, and that way, like,
I don't think they would want to go with that for economy concerns, but maybe like a low alking machine, perhaps, maybe.
Yeah.
Or would something. That even get used? I don't know.
It would be an item thing.
Right? Yeah, that's true, and we can use more of that. Also, they will be adding reasons to level items beyond level 12 aside from just XP. So you're not going to have any reason to level an item beyond 12 for more XP. You're going to actually have usable reasons to take these items beyond level 12. No more siphoning and disassembly bonuses for level 12, which is, of course, the XP side of it. They also feel that these devices shouldn't be so powerful that when an item reaches level 20, it just becomes overpowered and outclasses everything in that category. So that's what they're aiming for, is they're aiming to make levels 12 to 20 more useful, but not completely overpowered. And XP is going to stop at level 12, and it's going to maintain that same XP curve, which I think is nice because, I mean, have you guys ever known anyone to level an item right now beyond level 12?
Accidentally?
No. Yeah, just accidentally.
Yeah. I mean, it's not really efficient to do so. So, and I mean, it makes perfect sense for them doing this, and I'm glad they are. They're also going to be looking at machinery, which we have been talking about, and it's going to take input over time, and it's going to be a week, so that it could take maybe longer. And they want it to fit nicely within the realm of RuneScape, and I think everything we've suggested here does fit nicely, right?
Yeah.
And these machines will need to be discovered with blueprints using a similar option to what we talked about before with reverse engineering. So,
oh, they could make like stuff to brew ale and beers.
Yeah.
You can already do that in your like POH a bit, but...
Kind of.
But, you just pull them out,
though.
And
you can also
do
that in Port Basmatis with wine, I think. But I don't know. I think it would be add a little bit more.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So,
And then you could have drunk boxing matches.
Well, I don't know. I'm instantly excited about invention again. How about you guys?
I'm excited for where they're going, but I wouldn't say this was awesome to hear.
Okay. How do you guys feel about invention playing a role in one of the large expansions this year? That's another question.
I think that's the rub for me. This was something that we should have had in updates anyway. If it's going to play a part in the expansion, okay. But you need to have it all filled out and figured out. And I did not get that impression from this. And the next expansion should be, what, another 3 or 4 months away. So how they are going to do this, I don't know. I think for me, one of the main like rubs to this was like, how are you going to make something that it's beneficial to go past 20? Because the time that takes that, it's such an investment of time. But yet, you don't want it to be overpowered or you don't want it to be too good. Okay. Then what do you propose? Because I don't understand how they're going to strike that balance. On top of that, I want way more element expansion. They've set the bar fairly high. There's a lot of content with Menophos, and I think anything short of that level of content, it's going to feel like a letdown.
Right, and that was my question. Is this going to be the only part of this expansion, or is this perhaps a part of a wider skill rework?
That would be cool.
But like, I mean, they definitely could do that, right? That could be an expansion on its own. So,
they're just going to drop another 120 on us. It's going to be a different skill.
You know, my friends are very, very worried that the mining and smithing is going to be a 120 rework. They have frantically been trying to get their 120s before it happened.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was.
I wouldn't either. Because there's no easy way to deal with the rune. There's just no easy way to deal with it. And I won't be too surprised if that happens. But, yeah, that's fears for another day. That's fears for another day.
And I think that's where our discussion here goes into the nature of expansions. And, you know, if this is ultimately going to be shaping up to be one of the expansions, I honestly think it will perform better than Menophos, because the way I see Menophos going is that I give Menophos, you know, 2 to 4 weeks, and the only people who are going to be in Menophos are people who are either grinding rep, leveling through 50 to 70, or people passing through to go to the Slayer dungeon. That's my prognosis with Menophos, and that's why I think talking about invention as an expansion ultimately makes it a better expansion than Menophos will be.
I wish I could say I disagree, but I think you're probably right, although it hurts me, because Menophos is a great little city.
Yeah, I mean, you just got to look at how graphically stunning it is and the amount of resources that went into it. Like, there's nothing technically wrong with Menophos. It's just content that's going to be out of date for a good chunk of the player base in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah. But I understand where Jagex is at, too, because, like, you can't cater everything to us max players. But at the same time, the majority of your player base is accomplished at this point. You know what I mean? So it's kind of it's got to be tough for them. You know, I give them I'll cut them some slack because it has to be tough.
Yeah, and I mean, they're entirely entitled to do this, because if you think back to yourself, when was the last large mid-level skilling update for RuneScape? A long time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So in some ways, Menophos was actually needed. It's just the vast majority of the player base that we deal with and that we talk to is going to start finding its usefulness waning away. So, and that's why I think talking about invention as an expansion is a pretty neat idea. So, remains to be seen, you know, if it's on its own or if it's going to be part of a wider update. Be really interesting if it's part of a wider update.
And do you think it would be enough by itself? Do you think people would accept that as an expansion?
Well, we're talking levels 99 to 120. That's 21 levels.
Yeah.
Where they're going to be adding things to it.
But they did that with Slayer as part of an expansion.
Yeah. And, you know, I honestly feel that invention is so far away from people who are starting the game or people who might not have the requirements for it unlocked. And the XP curve is so different that I think if they just focused purely on 99 to 120 as part of the expansion without looking at the rest of invention or something else, it would probably not sit very well. And it's for that reason, I think, and I'm willing to bet at this point, that filling out invention from 99 to 120 will be a part of a wider update.
Okay. I'm hoping it will be part of a bigger update. I don't think it's enough on its own.
Yeah. What about you, Mr. Bistro?
I think that they should just go for a few more 120s and just bunch them all together. And honestly, if the next major expansion is coming up in a few months, are they just going to keep pushing out Amnesty every like 3 months?
And that's another very good question. Well, it wouldn't need to if it was just invention, because invention's already been in the game, so there'd be no question about that. But
They put themselves in the hole.
They certainly have. They certainly have. Well, it's going to be interesting to see where this goes, but interesting times ahead. All right. So we're going to move on to our questions right now. This first one is from the RR Man. Hey, y'all, long time no question. I've been busy with real life and not been on RS so much. That was until a couple weeks ago. Now I'm back in full force. I'm training to be the very best like no one ever was. With Pikachu by my side, I will be a Slayer Master. I'm not sure that's how it works. All right. Question one, with the announcement of Invention Batch 2, what are you most excited for? I'm excited for these machines, and I'm glad they mentioned those again. Question two, following on that, in the first development diary, they made it sound like Batch 2 of Invention is just part of the next expansion. We agree with that. If so, what else do you think will be included or would you want to see? And question three, what creatures will you put in your own Slayer dungeons? Hope all is well. I'm loving the new city, although I'm not a fan of the sand. It's coarse and rough and irritating, and it gets everywhere. Peace out, the RR Man.
Oh, my God.
Good luck finding my sneaky Star Wars reference.
Yes. Yes. Tatooine.
Ah, there you go, Tannis.
It's one of the best lines from the second movie right there.
I never saw that one, and I don't think I will.
Boo.
What are we most excited for with Invention Batch 2?
I'm excited about... Well, really, I'm excited about all three things almost equally. I am excited about the machines, but that remains to be... You know, I don't know how hyped I can get until I know what we're looking at. But being able to switch your gizmos out and also have a gizmo bag, that's huge. Anything that saves me bank space, that's good. And I'm looking forward to that.
I'm going to go with the swapping of gizmos as well and completing out the skill, seeing as it has been out for almost 2 years now.
I'd say completing out the skill too.
All right. And the machines will be good, too. So, what else do we think will be in this expansion? Because, I mean, I think based on our previous discussion here, we've effectively decided that it's going to be part of something wider, right? I know, Mr. Beaster, you said maybe some other skills, so 120.
Mm-hmm.
Which skills would you be, guess at?
Mining and smithing, because they keep failing at it, but maybe they actually aren't.
But the thing is, the mining and smithing rework isn't being worked on currently, and it's not due until next year at the earliest.
Maybe they're lying.
Well, they could be. They could be like they did with construction when that came out way back when.
It's a year of surprises. So.
Very true.
I don't know.
Very true.
I think it would be cool with Invention if they didn't bring everything to 120, but they brought everything to 100.
Oh, that would be interesting. So basically fill out the skill at the lower batches for it, or the lower ends, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think might be a good thing to do, because it is kind of sparse. And if this happens, as has been designed in this dev blog, anything below level 100 will still feel relatively useless compared to all the machines at level 100 plus, right?
Yep.
So...
Yeah.
All right. You know, I don't know at this point. I think what they could end up doing with this is they could, in essence, call this a quality of life expansion fix, where you fill out the rest of Invention, you bring out the bank rework, and you also, with that, revamp the PVM economy so that when you're doing PVM, you don't have primary skilling resources being dropped as frequently as they are now in PVM. Because I know that's something that Mod Timbo has been working on, and I think it would be an interesting part of this expansion if they were basically bringing all the modern skills into alignment and basically sprucing them up. So... if we're talking about sprucing up skills, agility, that could also use a major rework. Hunter, I think, as well. So, I don't know. I would go with the bank rework, the PVM economy change, and a rework on agility or Hunter along with this. So, that's where I'm sitting on this one.
Yeah, I think you're definitely on the right track, Shane. I agree totally with the – I think the bank rework would probably be in this one, the invention, maybe some of the other essentially what drop table reworks. I could see this also having – this would be a place where they would throw in the boss. There's supposed to be another boss this year that they could put in the kind of the slot. And I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they threw in another six-stage quest getting closer to the end of that, maybe.
Interesting.
I don't think that doing quality of life changes would be enough for a major expansion. I think if we are to see anything for major expansion, it might be a graphical redesign or update of some place. Or
Sears Village.
A new place entirely, possibly.
That one I know that
they are working on that one, and they said are doing next.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It seems like quality of life stuff might not be enough. So whatever they would release, it would need to be a big enough area, maybe Sears Village. And at least Eastardone, and some new quests in the area.
All right.
It just doesn't seem like it would be big enough. Maybe that's they'll bring in the next elemental workshop in.
Oh no,
that would be great. That would be great. That would be great.
No, don't.
That is one of my favorite quest lines.
Say it. No.
That's what's happening.
Oh no.
You can augment your what do you think they're going to use next?
Oh, no, that's where the machines could come from. No. It's making sense. It's hurting me. Oh, Lord.
You could augment your body.
Your body buddy.
Oh, there you go.
You can make it a body buddy body.
All right. And third, I'm assuming you guys are done with that one. What will you guys put in your own Slayer dungeons?
I'm done.
What do you got?
So, I have the high traffic areas that can be a pain, and people tell you to hop. So I put in Abbeys, Dark Beast, and Gargoyles. And also, I have daily helms for all of those, so I can just boom, 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 knock out three tasks in a row quickly.
All right.
I'm not entirely sure. It's kind of a pain to go and kill some of the dragons, I guess I would say. So if I could, I would like to get maybe steel dragons in there or mithril dragons. I don't have any problem going and killing the rune ones. But other than that, I would probably also put in the abyssal demons in there. And then the other one, I just haven't given enough thought. I don't know if you can put desert skike worms in there, but I enjoy those so much that I would just like to have them.
Yeah, I don't know if you can do strike worms or not. I know you can't do lava ones, but I'm not sure about the others. You know, we need to find that out because I can't do ice strike worms because of where it's at, because of the way they blend in. They're actually a good task. If I could move those to my dungeon, I might kick out the gargoyles. Okay. Now we're thinking.
I would go for Aberrant Spectres, Dark Beasts, and Ice Strike Worms. Do you know why?
Look at Shane with the herbs. Look at Shane with the herbs.
And Crush Nest for the Strike Worms.
Yep. He's a farmer.
Yeah.
Oh, Shane.
Yes.
Or were you going to give us an update later on your farming?
No, I'm not going to give an update on that because I've been entirely focused on Menaphos, on the main character.
Fair enough. fair enough. It just, that reminded me.
Yeah. All right. I'm glad how we all knew very quickly about what we would like to have in our dungeon. Right. Assuming strike worms are allowed. I know the lava ones aren't, but the rest of them would be good to get some resolution on this to try and figure that out.
Yeah. Ice would be really fun. Wonder if you could get glacers in there.
I would think so, yeah.
Hmm.
It's not on the, like, not.
No, you wouldn't want glacers in there. You know why?
Because. Well, I'm just saying. Okay. I wonder if you could.
Yeah, but you wouldn't want them in there because you get that Stone of Jazz bonus for fighting them down there.
That's true. Most of the stuff that's not allowed, though, it's because there's some kind of a environmental or risk element to it.
If you put Ripper Demons down there, they become much more manageable.
Why is that?
Because you can attack them in like one or two groups. You don't have to overpopulate them.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. That makes sense.
Oh, and man. Maybe the lighting will be better.
Yeah, that would be good as well. That was very dark. Thank you, Mr. R. Man, for that question. This next one is from Sirion, and it leads very nicely into tech news. What is your favorite E3 announcement? E3 was, of course, this past weekend.
That's too easy.
All right. Go right ahead.
Metroid Prime 4 in development.
We got a logo.
A logo for...
Yes, that's enough for me.
A logo.
That's the best part of E3.
All right.
And then they announced another Metroid game? Oh.
Yeah, for DS.
How about you, Tannis? What, are you going to go with Metroid as well?
No. Okay. No, I have some picks, actually. So from, I guess from like bottom up, I'm going to start with Shadow of War. Can't wait for that game. That looks awesome. It's not really a sequel to Shadow of Mordor, but it's the same. You know, it's Lord of the Rings. Open world. It's going to be really, really good. After that, Far Cry 5. I am so stoked about. I love Far Cry games, and this one looks really good. There's been some controversy with it, which is just dumb. I don't get it.
What kind of controversy? Like,
because this time it's it looks like some like fundamentalist kind of Christian-y type cult looking thing, possibly as the bad guys. You know, I don't know. I think people just really love to complain about Far Cry games because, you know, first they complained that they were, you know, that you were killing indigenous people in 3 and 4. Now they're, you know, white Christian fundamentalists, so we have a problem with that. I don't know. But they had some, the trailer is when people kind of, you know, when the internet erupted and kind of complaining about that. I think it looks like a great game. I can't wait for it. But the one that I'm waiting for the most, the biggest, I can't wait. It's Battlefront 2. In many ways, it's the game that we should have got the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever, that's in the past. Yeah. I'm happy that this one, you know, they've addressed a lot of the concerns. The DLC is all included. It looks great, just like the first one looked great, and this one looks great too. I think there's been major improvements to the how you get heroes and vehicles and things of that nature, because that's one of the things that made the original Battlefront so special. And there's a single player campaign, and that's the most important. So I cannot wait for Battlefront 2.
I have my fingers crossed that they include Galactic Conquest, even if it uses supremacy mode in order to make it work. Or just a bunch of different modes. Galactic Conquest needs to come back.
I would love for that to happen. I'm very leery. I don't, you know, they haven't mentioned it, which makes me kind of think maybe it's not there. But I totally agree. I'd love for it to be there. I mean, love it.
Everyone keeps saying that they want it. I don't know why they don't just do it. you know?
that may be some paid. That might be some paid DLC they throw at us later. I mean, I don't know. Or maybe they wait for Battlefront 3 to come out. I don't know.
Maybe.
But either way, we do have a single player. There's been major improvements, and I mean, the Battlefront game, it, like I said, it looks really good, and it's always looked good. It just, this is the game that we should have got the first time around. So really happy about that. E3 was cool, man. I mean, there's like some really good announcements. I try not to get too super hyped about games that are too far out.
No Man's Sky.
I've learned my lesson. Yes.
I'm also really looking forward to Last of Us 2. Naughty Dog really did a number on the first one, so I can't wait for the second one. You guys ever play that one?
No.
I haven't.
Oh, so good. It's a PlayStation exclusive, though.
Oh, okay, that would be why. Yeah. I've never seen it that much. My favorite announcement was Microsoft announcing that the original Xbox games will be backwards compatible with the Xbox One family.
Very cool.
It's now you got this huge, huge anthology of games that's inevitably going to all come and be playable on one modern platform. So they're going to add them over time. So if you have those old Xbox games and we have the Xbox 360 ones now, they're going to be playable on the one. So that's a huge announcement for Microsoft, and it really shows their emphasis this year on gaming, I feel. So that's my favorite announcement from E3. Didn't really pay too much attention to it aside from that. So I think that answers Sirion's question. That jumps very nicely into tech news. But before that, if you guys want to send your own questions in, update.rsbnb.com/ask or the phone number, which is 571-57BNB, 571-572-2632. All right. What else did you guys pay attention to at E3? I know Microsoft announced that Project Scorpio is now known as the Xbox One X, which has been confirmed to have a 31% faster CPU, 50% increase in RAM, and of course, 4K capable. The One X will be available this holiday season in November for $499, and of course, the backwards compatibility of original Xbox games that I mentioned.
I don't know. I think that Nintendo's conference, like at the beginning of this week, was just – it knocked it out of the park. The two Metroid games, you got Mario Odyssey, you got Breath of the Wild, Zelda's DLC, you got
– there's a new Pokemon game that's also going to be coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rocket League in the fall for Switch.
Yeah, Rocket League, and then confirmed that Skyrim's coming.
Skyrim?
To
yeah.
Like, okay, yeah. First of all, like, you know that Nintendo did the right thing because I've wanted to play Rocket League on the go, and now you can when that comes out. And it's clear. Why this console is selling a bunch. And I think it adheres right to me and my kind of lifestyle. So I'm really excited. I mean, there's other games, like I even forgot to mention, like Splatoon 2 is coming out, and Xenoblade Chronicles 2. Just a whole bunch of good stuff.
All right.
Yeah, I even forgot. I forgot a couple of them, too. There's, you know, the Wolfenstein 2, the like Rise of the Colossus, that is going to be awesome. If you've never played any of the modern Wolfensteins, play them. They are so good. And this is from someone that absolutely sucks at FPS shooters, but it is so good. The stories are just, they're really, really good games. I've been through the Old Blood and the New Order, and they're just great games. So I can't wait to see the next one in that series. I don't get Microsoft's decision to go with the One X. Scorpio is way better name.
Yeah, it's, well, that was a project code name. And I mean, as long as it's got Xbox One in it, I think that is the, that's the, discerning factor, because last year was the Xbox One S. Now we're at the X, which of course takes it to that next level.
But Shane, how many grandparents and parents are going to be wandering through stores and bringing home one S with kids going, I wanted the One X. This is bullshit.
Well, you know, the thing is, you're not going to notice the difference between a One S and a One X aside from the 4K capability, unless you got one of those HD 4K TVs. So
I thought the One S does have 4K capability.
Oh, maybe it does. Yeah, it does. You're right. So, I mean, you're not going to notice too much of it. So, in any case, Microsoft also announced a new Forza game, and Porsche with this also showed a car for the first time with this to detail how much emphasis there is on the Forza, Forza franchise. Sony emphasized their PlayLink software to link mobile and console gaming, and they also had a heavy emphasis of PlayStation VR. So no new hardware this year for Sony, and that's where they're ultimately going with their Sony platform, is the VR area. So. All right, anything else from E3?
That covers it for me.
Yeah, there's a couple really cool pirate games, and their names escape me.
Oh, was it Black Flag? Or no, not Black Flag. I know which one you're talking about.
It's not Assassin's Creed. but it's One Skull one. There's an Xbox exclusive one, and then I think there is a multi-console one. But both of them look fantastic. One of them looks more naval combat like, and the other looks more kind of RPG, have fun, kind of almost like RuneScape kind of thing, where you just hunt for treasures and stuff.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about. That's I thought it looked good too. I can't remember the name, but I thought it looked really good.
All right, well, I'm going to move us on from that, if that's all right with you guys, to a Snapchat story.
All right.
Snapchat and its stock trading company Snap has sunk to its initial IPO price. It just hit its IPO price of $17 today, and this is on par with the slide that Snapchat has been on ever since the initial bump following its IPO. It debuted back in March at $17 and first began trading at $24. Its all-time high was $27.09 on March 3rd, one day after its IPO, and we are now down 37% to its initial price of $17. And you might be wondering why this is the case. Well, it's that Snapchat is actually struggling to innovate and create new features and build new users, much like Twitter has done, because Facebook has been able to copy pretty much all of Snapchat's core features within both Facebook and Instagram without any substantial investment of resources. So as you can see here, this basically obsoletes Snapchat, and Snapchat is forced to innovate, which they really haven't been able to do. They released something recently called Spectacles Camera and expanded distribution of the product, including advertising, but that has not increased its bottom line, and that is why we are seeing these results here with the share. It's also worth noting that people who bought the shares initially are not able to sell for 150 days, and that period expires on July 31st. What? Yeah. So if you bought a share initially, you can't sell it until Monday, July 31st. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens when all these initial investors do come July 31st, if they keep or sell. And of course, if they sell, that's going to send the price down even further.
It's time to short them. Short them.
Yeah. And I mean,
I feel like there's manipulation going on here at some level.
No, it's just Snapchat is a horribly thought out business venture. There's no reason this company should be worth billions of dollars. There's absolutely no reason why. I mean, it's an app where you take photos, you send them to people, put crazy filters on them, then they disappear. They are somehow making money by selling premium filters to companies and allowing people to advertise inside the Snapchat stories. They're somehow making money off that. But beyond that, I don't see Snapchat as a viable product when Facebook and Instagram can implement that quickly and basically
this is what would
core feature.
This is what would have happened if Vine wasn't bought by Twitter.
Oh,
and
yeah,
Vine
absolutely.
Tried to do the same thing.
Absolutely.
Like, it would have tanked just like this. It's just that their niche was so specific and so easy to copy that they were doomed to die from the beginning.
Yeah, and I think what you're going to see in a year is you're going to see Snapchat at such a low price where in a year to a year and a half now, you're going to have someone like Instagram or Facebook or Twitter buy them up for a much lower price than they initially offered Snapchat. Which, I mean, makes sense. It's been rumored that the Snapchat CEO is an arrogant bastard who doesn't know what he's talking about. And I think anyone who refuses a multi-billion-dollar deal with Facebook is arrogant and thinks they probably know better. Because if you have the option to integrate your product into Facebook, just like WhatsApp did, you take that. And it guarantees that you're going to be around, right?
Well, yeah. You know, like, I think you're right. I mean, you're 100% right from a business end, but I wonder, like, I don't think all this consolidation on the tech side is necessarily a good thing.
No, it's not. And I have long said that the U.S. government in particular needs to look at monopoly laws for the 21st century, because you have a monopoly in search. You have a monopoly in social. Those monopolies are held by Google and Facebook respectively, and they need to be shaken loose at some point because no one can compete with these two companies.
Yeah,
so,
that monopoly is moving into advertising too.
There you go.
Which could mean like a whole new bag of problems for the internet.
Yeah. And I mean, it, granted, yes, it falls on the U.S. government to do something because that's where these companies are incorporated, but other countries, and I'm thinking of the EU in particular, need to take steps to deal with this because the EU has been notoriously good with breaking up monopolies and preventing collusion like that. So hopefully at some point someone will force one of these companies to do something about this. But
yeah, and unfortunately don't wait on the US to do something because nothing can be done. It's gridlock. It's terrible, and nothing's going to change for a long time.
Nothing's going to change for at least 3.5 more years.
Yeah. So. Fun.
All right. On to another huge tech news story. Verizon has completed its $4.48 billion purchase of Yahoo, and Marissa Mayer, the former CEO, is stepping down with a whopping $23 million severance package.
Isn't that nice?
Yes. This deal concluded on Tuesday, and Marissa Mayer, who has been CEO since 2012, will be stepping down. Yahoo will be combined with AOL, which Verizon bought for $4.4 billion in 2015 into a new company called Oath. The Yahoo and AOL consumer brands will remain, and AOL CEO Tim Armstrong will become the new CEO of Oath. So there we have it, folks. Yahoo has been relegated to America Online AOL status.
That's awesome. But that just makes me wonder why Verizon still pursued this. Yahoo is and
Verizon's
forgive,
a media company.
Well, forgive my language here, but Yahoo is an on-fire bag of shit. It is. It's been hacked. Its assets are at risk, and they still spent that much money on it? It's like you're buying something that can infect yourself.
It's the user base with all those Yahoo email accounts.
Well,
yeah,
and
all those infected
may,
accounts.
But they may be – they have an eye towards the future.
Yeah,
they're
I
not
think
stupid. There's no reason to spend that kind of money.
You're right.
They are putting all their eggs on the idea that old Ajit Pai is going to roll back the regulations put on. Shane, help me here.
On
net neutrality.
Okay, net neutrality.
That this gives them a vertical integration model because they will have the distribution.
Oh, they have now
jack up. Yes,
they have the they have the pipes and they have the distribution medium. So this could effectively let them create an online media empire that rivals Netflix, that rivals cable TV. And what they can do then is they can force it out through their IPTV service to people's homes.
Yeah. You got to think as crooked as possible, because that's what they do.
Well, and you know, to be fair, you don't even need net neutrality to do that, because they're a big enough company that this is going through their own network. Net neutrality is designed to affect the lower people. So they can do this, and they can just be so big that it wouldn't bother that, and it can be done even if these net neutrality provisions stay in place.
But they can slow people down. I mean, they can slow their competitors down.
They could.
You know, that's the difference. And so I don't know. And I also want to, but my other comment, I guess, with this is, so the CEO gets $23 million golden parachute. Okay. For what? For having some of the crappiest security on the internet?
To be fair, that probably came from before she took over.
I mean, maybe, but how much? What did the employee at Yahoo get? What did he get?
Nothing.
Yeah. So that, I mean, I don't know. It's not right.
Standard corporate America business offerings right there.
Now, I know, but it's like, when are we going to learn? I'm sorry.
Well, one would have thought we would have learned after the 2008 recession, but that's an entirely different podcast on its own, because I could go on and on about that forever.
Isn't it? Yes.
Anyways, that's it for tech news this week, everyone. Moving on to some other things, and specifically our Skill of the Month update, Slayer Skill of the Month, since Menaphos was released. We have the Lion 777, currently in first place with 10.6 million XP gained. Second place is you, Tanis. You have overtaken Thieves with 7.9 million XP gained, and Thieves has flatlined with 5.4 million XP gained.
It's a month is a long competition, man. It's a long competition. So.
Yeah, and if you stop, you're not going to be able to have a chance at catching the Lion, because it looks like you guys are maintaining relatively parallel trajectories.
Yeah, there's a few things I've been there's a few things. Yeah, it's I was really worried about Vic. I was like, uh-oh, this could be a problem. They're throwing a wrench into things. But apparently everything's been running just the way it is. That's a large lead for Slayer, but it's not impossible. We're halfway through, and judging by his starting XP, I'll be interested to see what happens when he gets about another 4 mil. See if he slows down or keeps going.
Right, for 120.
We'll find out there. And I've been, I don't know, just if anyone's interested, I have been streaming a lot of this competition from my end. So
twitch.tv/Tanis79.
Yeah, thank you, Shane.
I remember these things. Yes.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
All right, so we do have some achievements this week, though not as many as last week, so I'll just read through these. On June 14th, we have Ali the Wise, who got 99 Strength. And on June 12th, we have a Seafarer, got 99 Magic, and Poolsard got 120 Farming also on the 12th. Congratulations. We have Superjet with 99 Agility on the 11th, Ms. Conan 10, 99 Hunter on the 10th, and on the 9th, we have Catmac with 99 Fishing, and Feel My Pokes with 99 Strength. Congratulations to everyone.
Congratulations. Good job.
Congrats.
All right. I believe Mr. Bistro has a pick of the week.
I do. And this has been on my mind all week. And it is the board game from Fantasy Flight Games, partnered with Gamer Studio or Game Makers, who make Warhammer 40K Games Workshop. That is Talisman 4th Edition Revised, which is the best board game ever. If you were to take Monopoly and mix it with D&D or Pathfinder, this is what you'd get out of it. It is a game that takes probably 4 or 5 hours to play.
Oh, boy.
And the object of the game is to build up your character and get the crown of power in the middle of the board. And the board wraps in three different levels. And as you progress, things get harder and harder. And there is PvP mechanics in this game. There's strategy to this game. And the expansions are endless to this game. And the reason why I bring it up now is that as of recent, Fantasy Flight and Game Workshop, they actually divorce their companies. So the talisman that Fantasy Flight owns, which is, I think, the master version of this game, is no longer something that they can produce. And a fifth edition has been announced to come out this year from the game makers. So it'll be really interesting to see what fifth edition is like, but I highly recommend that anyone go out and pick up a copy of Fantasy Flight's Talisman 4th Edition Revised. It runs you a little over like $40.
Where the expansion.
You can find it on Amazon or any other game store local. The one issue is if you want to buy into the expansions, which add so much to the game. I mean, they have a city, a dungeon, they have like hills and forests, just all sorts of different things that you can play in for this game. Those expansions are going to be much more expensive since they've stopped printing them for Fantasy Flight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so actually, and this is funny, the main game is the cheapest part of the game, and that's going to run you $40. So it's relatively cheap on Amazon if you go out and get it right now. It's just all the expansions after that are going to be pretty expensive. This might be circumvented with 5th edition coming out, Game Workshop. They are known to have high prices, though. They do make the Warhammer 40K miniatures game, which is notoriously high priced. So this, Fantasy Flight, they're a good company. They make great games, and this is my all-time favorite.
Alrighty, sounds good. Thank you for that pick of the week. So, Tanis, what have you been up to on RS?
Slayer. That's it. I'm just killing stuff. I'm trying to, I'll try to do, like, you know, a couple tasks, and then I'll try to go. I try to capture the souls while that, and then I'll do a couple low level things and get souls. I'm trying to get 50 souls so I can have a teleport directly to my pyramid. So yeah, and that's basically all I have done because you can't let up. you can't.
There is certainly a lot of content. Okay, Oaks. How about you, Mr. Bistro?
I've been doing Slayer as well. I did take a little bit of time and just do some Prif thieving to kind of just lazy around a little bit while I kind of looked at the codex. But yeah, I've just been doing a bunch of Slayer, kind of getting back into it, relearning a lot of the things I forgot when it comes to utilizing or using the least amount of food, which, yeah, that's the joy of Slayer. Like, it doesn't take food if you know what you're doing and you're getting the right kinds of tasks. A lot of the times you can bring a couple sharks with you and your abilities will take care of the rest. So that's what I've been doing.
All right, that sounds good. As for me, you guys can probably guess what I've been doing. I have been doing a lot of fishing in Menaphos, doing the daily soul obelisks, and I have done the two quests. And fingers crossed we'll have Fight Club next week, maybe not, depending what we end up talking about, but I should end up being able to get the final requirements for Fight Club by the end of the weekend, so that'll be really great indeed. But yeah, really just been focusing in on Menaphos, and there have been some days that I even haven't even made it to Prif to mine my Crystal Sandstone, because I normally do that daily for my Herblore stuff. But there have been a few days I missed that. So yeah, still focusing it on Manaphos hugely. And I mean, hey, it's a nice distraction and a nice place to be. So it's working out great. But I believe that's it. We have made it through this podcast. Lots of quests, lots of gaming discussion. So thank you both for being here, and thank you for the listeners for sharing your time with us. And if you guys want to find us, we're in, of course, Friends Chat, Bits Bytes, and we do also have a Discord server where you can join and chat with us and talk with us if you see us online. And you can find that by going to the bottom of the forums, rsbnb.com/forums, and clicking the link. Thanks for sharing your time with us, everyone, and we will see you next week.
Bye. Bye-bye.